Thank you. Please be seated. The court is ready to hear arguments from petitioners in Coastal versus Coates.
May it please the court, Mr. Harry Reasoner will present arguments for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, this case involves the forfeiture of a multi-well lease where Coastal had failed to pay royalties during an interim because it had issued a division order in the form set forth in 402D, and the lessor had not responded to its request for division order. There was ongoing litigation between Coastal and the lessors over a variety of leases and other wells, and they had during that period sent a demand letter referencing that litigation. They took the position that that demand letter was a written demand for payment of royalties under a new F6 well, which the division order covered. And I'm going to get to that in just a moment. The Court of Appeals affirmed that, and when it did, it made, I respectfully submit, two fundamental errors that dramatically affect the jurisprudence of this state. First, it misconstrued the significance of executing a lease without warranty of title for the mineral estate. Secondly, it misconstrued the division order statute as containing two sets of provisions, one for oil and gas in C1, another contained in the form D, set forth as a statutory form. Thereby, it made the statute unworkable, and it created a situation where when leases are executed without warranty of title, it will become virtually impossible to obtain a workable division order.
But the first question will control the resolution of the second, won't it? I mean, if we were to find that the no warranty of title provision in the lease precludes the statutory indemnities, then we don't reach your issue number two.
I would agree with that, John. I do want to devote the bulk of my argument to those two things. But before I do, I would like to turn very briefly to the point that's covered in tab one of the booklets that I hope you have received and is set up here. And that is the position that I submit that is an independent ground for reversal and rendition of this case. The lease provided for forfeiture if we withheld royalties unreasonably or wrongfully after a written demand. I respectfully submit that the Coates in this case made no written demand within the meaning of that provision. They sent us this letter dated March 28, 1998, and it is attached as an appendices to the brief. It said Ray calls number 39995G. It referred to a case pending in the 370th District Court of Hidalgo County.
Let me ask you about that argument real quick, because sure. It seems to me where that leads us is a demand letter in a demand letter that references litigation generally. Are we then required to go back and look at the most recent petition, and the demand letter can only cover what's in that most recent petition, or is referencing litigation in general broad enough to encompass the claims that are being made here, even though the petition hasn't yet been amended?
Yes, I think that's a very fair point, Your Honor. Here, the 12th amended petition did not cover the F6 lease. The F6 well. Production on the F6 well had not begun. So when you filed a demand letter and referred us to the 12th amended petition, or to that litigation,
that's my point, though. If you're just referring to litigation, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're referring to the last petition. I mean, as long as the lease is covered, it would seem that anything that came under that lease could be subject to the litigation. That's a very narrow reading you're giving me.
No, Your Honor, you're sitting there, you're litigating, and this litigation is about underpayment of royalties. They have demanded forfeiture in the past for underpayment of royalties. You receive a letter that refers you to the litigation and says, I'm claiming forfeiture of the Ely's and the Effley's, and refers you to this pending litigation. Where would one look to see what the issue was? The Court of Appeals was confused and said, we can't look at parole evidence at all because it regarded it as a contract construction issue.
What do you think the letter should have said? What would be enough?
I think if the letter had in any way referred to our failure to pay royalties on F6, or had told us they were not going to sign the division order, any of those things that referred us to the F6 well would have been fine.
If they had left off the Ray line and not referred to the litigation, then would it have been all right?
Your Honor, I think that would become... a complex question. Obviously, I would not have the argument I have now, because then we would look at it and say, well, they're demanding forfeiture for something.
Well, as I understand your argument, it's the Ray line that references the pending litigation, which was for underpayment of royalties, that you claim led Coastal to believe that this was a demand to pay the royalties that Coates was claiming had been underpaid. And that you had no notice that it was for a failure to pay royalties on a particular well.
That is correct. The F6 well, the new well where production had not been begun, was not in any way involved in that litigation. So by referring us to that litigation, they were either deliberately or accidentally completely misleading us, and I respectfully submit under the plain meaning of English, that letter cannot refer to something not involved in the litigation.
When you say the production has not yet begun, do you mean as of the date of that letter or as of the date of the 12th amended petition?
As of the date of the 12th amended.
Because production had started in November of 1997, I think. Right?
Yes, yeah, sure.
That went on the F6 well.
And don't hold me to this precisely, but I believe, Your Honor, that the F6 well was about 8 days away from production.
And the F6 well was not included in the litigation?
Not at that point, no, because no production had begun, so there was nothing to complain about.
Well, but the 12th amended petition did say any subsequent wells or units, didn't it, at one point, and describing the nature of the litigation, wells that existed at the time as well as, quote, any subsequent wells or units drilled on the oil.
I think it would have complained about underpayment in that regard. It could not have complained about a failure to pay on a well where production had not yet begun. But it could
apply to a well where no royalties at all have been paid and say that that's an underpayment, can't it? I mean, the failure to pay anything is just as much as an underpayment as not paying $10.
One could conceive those circumstances.
But the whole point is, because the well was not producing, it can't be covered by that letter.
By the 12th Amendment petition to which that letter referred us, precisely, Your Honor. Well, we have articulated that further in our brief, and let me now turn to what I believe are the errors of law that the Court of Appeals made that I think make this so critical. Basically, the Court of Appeals held that the execution of a lease without warranty of title to the mineral estate is an agreement that you will not receive warranty of title or certification to the proceeds for payment of the division order. It is an agreement, according to the Corpus Court of Appeals, that brings it under the otherwise agreed language of the division order and statute, C1C, so that when they did not warrant the title, to which we agreed, of course, to the underlying mineral estate, the Court of Appeals, by equating those two, holds that we have thereby lost our right to certification of proceeds or warranty of proceeds. And here, this chart at tab 5 of your notebook, of your tablet, shows the exclusive list of provisions that is permitted under the division order statute. The Court of Appeals holding knocks out the two green provisions. She knocks out indemnity and reimbursement by reasoning that by agreeing to a lease without warranty of title to the mineral estate, we had thereby agreed that we would not be entitled to indemnification under a division order of reimbursement because there would be no certification or warranty of their right to proceeds under the royalties.
I have a question about the lease.
Yes, Your Honor.
It seems to say that they don't warrant title, but it's agreed that if they own less than they purported to convey, that their royalties are proportionately reduced. And you have not seemed to stress that particular clause. Is there a reason for that?
Why we have not stressed the proportionate reduction clause, Your Honor?
It seems to me that they've agreed that if they don't own what they say they do, they aren't entitled to be paid royalty.
Well, I think that that could have significance in a future scenario, but we have no dispute with them in that regard. I mean, there's really no issue here about what amount of title on their title to the mineral estate is not an issue here.
I guess my point is, maybe I'm misreading it, but even though they're saying we're not wanting title, if we don't own what we say we own, you don't have to pay us royalty on that.
If that were determined, at least
do you see that as something different from what's in the statutory division order form? You have to pay us back if we pay you royalty that really aren't owed.
Yes, I would see, Your Honor, the statutory division order as giving us protection to seek reimbursement or indemnification if we had greatly overpaid the SR. And it seems to me that the great difference is between warranting the mineral estate, not warranting title for it. Let me go to that. Right,
I'm talking about the proportionate reduction part of the lease. It says if we don't own, we say we own an eighth royalty and we don't, and you pay them for an eighth, would you be entitled under the lease to get your money back since they don't own what they say they did with respect to the royalty?
You mean, could we sue them if we had paid out to a series of payees proceeds, we have no division order, could we then go back and sue them under the
provision of the lease that says they'll proportionately reduce what they're entitled to?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I had thought of the proportionate reduction clause as reducing it for future payments if it was determined that they failed to see it. How coterminous that would be with protections under the division order, I would not be clear. Certainly, if we had paid it to someone other than the lessee, I don't know that where we've had a series of assignments is here, for example, is typical of the case with estate planning. We have some 29 payees under that division order. Let me make one other brief point as to why I think that they are in error, and that is that certification under the division order statute is an interest in personal property. Warranty, and is equivalent to warranty, as Professor Burney points out in her article. Warranty of title to mineral under the grounds is a completely different thing. One is realty, the other is personalty. Lessor is warranting our title in the mineral estate, which he had refused to do. But under a division order, they're warranting their own title and the right to receive it. Measure of damages is different. Under failure of the mineral estate, we would only get the cost of drilling bonuses, whereas the measure of damages under the division order would be the improperly proceeds. I think it is clear that her equation of these two estates was erroneous. Once you recognize that failure to warrant one does not mean that you're a failure to warrant the other, it's clear that we have not agreed. Section C1C then applies, and we are entitled to withhold on certification. The argument that D contains additional provisions is clearly wrong under the statutory language. C says it's for both oil and gas. Subsection E of the statute, which provides for the withholding of royalties, says you do so when you meet the criterion of C. D is not even mentioned, so that if D did contain additional provisions, which by statutory definition it cannot, then you wouldn't be able to withhold royalties under E. Simply make the statute, it would be nonsensical to set the standard in C, have the form in D with different provisions, and say that there's one form you can use for oil and gas and another for oil. If I may, I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Ms. R.
May it please the Court. We are obviously here today, Your Honors, because you have some questions about the Court of Appeals opinion in this case, and I would like to take my time to answer any questions you have and assure you that that opinion is indeed completely consistent with every opinion this Court has ever handed down on document interpretation and on statutory interpretation. That opinion is also completely consistent with basic oil and gas principles that Coastal tends to ignore, and it also is consistent with industry practices. Regarding the statute, the Court of Appeals...
Well, let me ask you, if you don't mind, before we get to the statute, because it seems like the determinative question to get there is whether the no warranty of title provision excludes these indemnities.
You
Only
are right.
If we answer that question a certain way do we get to the statutory question.
You are right, Your Honor.
So if you could address Mr. Reasoner's argument in that regard, why aren't these different? I'd love to
refer to
his chart. I mean, he talks about the damages are different and therefore the indemnification is different. Is it true that on the warranty of title you get damages for cost of drilling the well as opposed to damages on the warranty of title to the production or proceeds of production is some different measure of damages? Because if that's the case, it would seem they would be two different warranties.
It is not the case, Your Honor. They have not accurately represented the effect of the no warranty in the lease versus the indemnity. Both of those provisions are risk-shifting contractual devices. And the F-lease says, I hereby give no warranty of title. And that title refers to the minerals and the royalties, the real property interest, which will eventually become personal property proceeds. But the way you determine the title to those proceeds, as this Court has recognized in virtually every title opinion that's handed down, is by figuring out the title and the minerals.
Okay, yeah, I understand the title piece, but what I'm concerned with is that if the damages piece is different as a result of the breach, then it would seem the purpose of the indemnities are different.
They are not different, Your Honor. In both, if you are warranting your title to the minerals and the royalties, you will be liable for damages in anything that you obtain that you were not entitled to. And that is the same once you get to the division order.
Now he says you're liable for the cost of drilling the well.
That is not correct, Your Honor. That is not correct.
So if I lease you the property to drill a well on and I don't own the property and I indemnify and I have a warranty of title, you can't sue me for that?
No, that's correct. That is correct, Your Honor. My point is, let's assume that there was no problem with the title, as in this case. And then the issue is, that's not your problem. The problem is later I overpay you royalties. Could they sue me if I made a warranty in the lease for breach of that contractual provision and sue me and recover damages? The answer is yes. And so the question when
but
you
But they couldn't recover damages for the cost of drilling the well.
Pardon?
They could not recover damages for the cost of drilling the well.
Your Honor, it would work both ways. That warranty in the standard leases where there's a broad warranty of titles in the minerals and the royalty, assume that the lessor does not own title. I could be liable for my damages for not the whole cost of drilling the well. They could not ever get me for that. But they could get me for the money I paid when my title failed, and they paid me a lot of money for that, the bonus.
Let me ask, just taking your lease standing up, it has a proportionate reduction for
yes, Your Honor.
Royalty. So if you say you own, even though there's no warranty of title, if you say I own a certain proportion and you don't, your royalty gets reduced.
Exactly.
Even under the common law, what would prevent an operator from suing you if they overpaid your royalty? What in this lease would prevent that from happening under our standard?
With a no warranty clause?
But when it contemplates that you only get paid for what you own royalty-wise.
Right. So they will reduce, if I don't own the title, I say, I purport to convey 100% of the royalties to the lessee. That means I would be entitled to the whole 1/8 landowner's royalty under the lease. It turns out I only own half of that. I only get half of that royalty.
Okay, so let's say there's no dispute that you only own half, but
right.
They mistakenly pay you for 3/4. And
right.
They say, whoops, we made a mistake. We want our money back. What under this lease prevents them from getting that money back?
Under our lease?
Yes.
The no warranty clause would prevent them from suing me on my lease.
Not on the lease. They just overpaid you. They mistakenly overpaid you royalty.
Yes, Your Honor.
And this lease prevents them from suing you for that overpayment under unjust enrichment, under any other theory.
If I understand your question, of course the lease determines the royalty, right?
Right.
So that's why they would be suing.
But they overpaid you. They just made a mistake.
If they overpaid me, it is that no warranty clause that would prevent them from suing me on the contract. Now, could the payor use some doctrines of, say, unjust enrichment to then sue me?
There's been no breach of warranty. They're not saying you don't own what you You don't. They agree you only own half. You say you only own half, but they paid you as if you owned 3/4.
Right.
And they just made a mistake. And your lease contemplates that you only get what you're supposed to get royalty-wise.
Right.
Why would their suit against you to get back an overpayment be somehow in conflict with the lease?
It would not. They could sue for overpayment under unjust enrichment.
And your lease doesn't prohibit that.
A no warranty clause. If they over, I'm not making any promises. So if it is the no warranty lease, then yes, they cannot sue me on the contract, Your Honor. What I am saying is there are always.
But they can get the money back.
There is a way for them to get the money back.
Nothing in the lease prevents them from getting overpayments back from you.
There are other theories outside of the contract, such as unjust enrichment. The issue here,
well,
though.
How does that differ from the provision? How does that differ from an indemnity in the provision?
It doesn't, and that is the point, Your Honor. There is a reason.
Well, if it doesn't, then how is it foreclosed by the no warranty of title in the lease?
This is how, Your Honor. The statute says, and I point out that we would ask this court to look at the real documents. There's a reason that counsel for Coastal did not put up any of the actual documents. If you look at the statute, the issue is, has Coates agreed otherwise down here in C? Have they agreed otherwise that they would not be willing to sign a division order that makes them take on this risk of indemnifying for an overpayment?
Well, that's just not true. If you want to look at the actual language, it says, the statute says indemnity with respect from all liability resulting from payments made to the owner.
That's exactly right,
and the lease doesn't refer to that.
Yes, it does, Your Honor. The lease royalty clause refers to warranty of title. If you
right.
look at
which
the,
is different from the payments.
No, it is not, Your Honor.
It's not different.
Your Honor, it is not different. In fact, that gets to the crux of the misrepresentation of their entire case. It is a sky is blue principle of oil and gas law that this court has recognized in every title opinion it's handled down.
You just keep focusing on the no warranty, but there's another whole sentence after that that says, if we don't own what we say we do, basically,
yes.
we only get paid royalty for what we own.
That's the point exactly.
So your lease contemplates that even if there's a breach of title,
right.
you still only get the warranty royalty, based on what you actually own.
What this clause is doing, Your Honor, this is a pro-lessor clause that you don't see usually. It's saying, I am not making any promises about my title. Usually, in lessor forms, the warranty is there. But you are
promising that if I don't own what I own, that I can't get paid for anything other than what I own.
Yes,
I may not
we always admit that I may not
be liable for drilling costs and all this other, but nothing in this lease would allow me to make a claim royalty-wise on anything that I don't own.
It gives the payor the right, Your Honor. It gives the payor the right that if I have purported to convey more than I own, that they can reduce my minerals proportionately. It protects them. But that is still not the issue under the statute that you raised, Justice Heck, and that is, how do they figure out title to the proceeds of production? The way they figure that out is by studying the title to the minerals. That is a principle that Coastal seeks to avoid, and they cannot. They finally admit on page 40 of their brief that maybe the title to these proceeds, which are personality, that's correct, Maybe that is somehow tied to the title of the minerals. It is absolutely tied.
But don't they do the same thing in deciding how much the lease obligates them to pay you on royalty? Because even if you say you own the whole thing, it turns out you don't. They examine title and figure out that you don't. The lease still says that you only get royalty on what you actually own based on your title. So how is the lease different from requiring you to pay back royalty that you don't?
Because, Your Honor, in this lease, in the first sentence, it says, I am not making any promises about my title. What you are pointing out in the proportionate reduction clause is if they figure out in the title that I shouldn't be paid as much, they won't do it. But what we are shifting away
and
here...
And you agreed that under the common law, you can get back under unjust enrichment anything they've overpaid you in the past.
Yes, Your Honor, but that's not...
So how's that different from this indemnity?
This is how, Your Honor. The issue in this case is under C. We are under C. And this division order statute has a very clear purpose. And that purpose is to ensure that leases are not used to amend leases. They have misrepresented what the division order statute was intended to do.
But if these indemnifications are different in any way, it would not be an amendment to the lease.
If they are, If they are different in any way from...
Any way. If the warranty of title is in any way different from the warranty of title to proceeds as opposed to the warranty of title to minerals, if those two warranties are different in any way, then it's not an amendment to the lease.
I think if your question is, are they a contradiction? Have the parties agreed otherwise? That is the issue for the court.
Yeah, and that's what I keep focusing in on.
And the answer to your question is they are not different.
Well, and that, again, that gets back to my question. In order for your argument to succeed, these warranties have to be identical in every respect.
Well, the issue has to be this. I think this is the issue. The issue is, would a lessor who has bargained away warranty of title about the royalty payments nonetheless be required under that statute, under the plain language of the statute and the legislative history, would that lessor be required to sign a document, a division order? That is not a contract. It's a unilateral document set by the payor lessee. Should they have to sign that and subject themselves to indemnity for the payments when they have shifted away that contractual agreement in the lease?
Well, only if those are the same thing.
And they are the same, Your Honor, and this is why. What you need to ask Coastal is, if they are not determining title to these minerals, all of their minerals, by an examination to the minerals in the ground, how are they figuring out that title?
But isn't that what they do in the lease? When the lease tells them they only have to pay you royalty on what you own, and they figure out title under the lease.
Yes, Your Honor.
To pay you royalty on
That's
what
right.
you own. So what's the difference?
There is no. That is the point, Your Honor. There is no difference between examining the title, and I figure out, as this court pointed out in Concord, although there were different opinions on the title issue, you went through 91-402. And you point out the way we figure out who gets the proceeds is by figuring out the title
Which
to
is
minerals.
Which is what you do under this lease.
Exactly. That is my point, Your Honor.
And the lease says you're only entitled to royalty on what you own.
Yes, but Your Honor, so we're assuming if they pay everything correct, they're not in trouble and we're not in trouble. But the issue here is, under C, would a royalty owner, when the express purpose of the legislative history behind the statute is to protect royalty owners. And in fact, the legislative history, if you look on page 29 of our brief and you look at the National Association of Royalty Owners' concerns, one of the whole points of the division order statute was to be sure that lessors did not have to sign division orders with indemnities.
What can they get under that indemnity clause that they can't get under the lease in the common law?
Under our lease, Your Honor, under our lease, we have agreed otherwise that we won't subject ourselves to damages if they make a mistake about our title. So under
what can they get under that indemnity clause that they cannot get under your lease?
Under this indemnity clause, they could get damages for the mistake in payments. They cannot get that.
What damages could they get?
If they overpay us, right. They could get those damages.
You've already conceded that if they overpay you, they can get it back in.
No, Your Honor, I did not concede that. Under the lease, our lease says, as to royalty payments, if you make a mistake, we are making no promises about that. That is the contradiction.
But you say under the common law, which overlays your lease, they can get under adjustment for
And all that
they get the money back.
But that begs the question, Your Honor, as to whether or not, under this statute, that's what we're construing here.
Okay.
It's a separate issue to see whether or not they might have a remedy. The whole point is, had Coastal tendered a division order that this statute required our client to sign, that's the issue, a condition.
Ms. Byrne, let me ask you a question.
Certainly.
I'm a little bit confused here. It is your position that unless the only promise to Coastal that you're, well, let me see, the only way that you can have a promise to Coastal to give them back any overpayment they make in terms of a contractual promise.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is through a warranty of your interest in the minerals.
Yes, Your Honor.
And if you expressly in the lease refuse to give them a warranty on your mineral interest, they cannot get a contractual promise out of you to reimburse them for any impact.
Exactly, Your Honor.
If they attempt by a division order to force you to make that promise that you will pay them back,
yes, Your Honor.
Then that is inconsistent with the lease, which refuses to give them that promise.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor.
Now, the question is, the lease says that you agree to a proportionate reduction if you don't own what you own.
Right.
how is that not a contractual obligation on your part? If they just, well, you agree to take less than what you expect if it's commensurate with your title, but that's not the same thing as a contractual promise to pay them back if they've already paid you.
Your Honor, what the proportionate reduction clause does is we got to understand what usually happens with an oil and gas lease at that early stage. A lessee, to avoid a trespass, will come out and get a lease from at least one of the co-tenants, because as we know, mineral titles are a mess, and there's probably at least one tenant we can figure out who owns it, say, undivided one half. I get that lease. I am not a trespasser. I will not be liable for drilling. But then the lessee knows at that point that probably this one lessor owns less than 100% of the minerals, so they want the proportionate reduction clause in there to say, look, if you actually turns out when I finally do the division order title opinion, which is going to determine how we pay the proceeds, I get to pay you less. And the lessor is perfectly willing to have that in there, even in a no-warranty lease, because they don't think they should be paid for more than they own. That's the role of the proportionate reduction clause.
But does that proportionate reduction clause, after a payment's been made, is that a contractual obligation to pay back?
No, Your Honor. No. The only role of the proportionate reduction clause is it gives the payor lessee the right that once they do figure out title and it turns out the lessor owns less, it gives them the right not to overpay. That's the point. It's a protection for the payor.
So now if you sign the division order, that has a requirement that you're now somehow warranting how much you're owed, you would be undertaking a contractual obligation to reimburse any previous payments that had been made that were over what that would ultimately be determined.
Exactly, Your Honor. And that is squarely within the plain meaning of the statute, and your interpretation, which is the same one that the Court of Appeals adopts, respects this an otherwise agreed language. I would ask you to look at the legislative history, which is appropriate under statutory interpretation. This whole statute was passed because of abuses with the division order. The whole point of the statute was to stop lessee payors from unilaterally sticking provisions in there when really what the division order is supposed to be is a certification of interest. That's why certification of title, Your Honors, is completely separate from indemnification. Coastal improperly blurs those distinctions. Had Coastal tendered to us a mere certification of title, we would have had to have signed it. And then they would have had any concerns they had about title allayed. Ironically here, they didn't have any concerns about our title. That is why they had consistently paid Coates with no division orders.
Let me ask you one question along those lines. You didn't sign the division order because, in your view, it contained provisions in addition to what is in subsection C and to what was in your lease.
Exactly.
Under 102E, 94.102E, and it's talked about in the brief, is that what you're relying on, that first sentence? If an owner in a producing party will not sign a division order because it contains provisions in addition to those in subsection E, the payer shall not withhold payment solely because of such refusal.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Let me ask one question about that.
Certainly.
Can that section, that sentence be read to impose on you an obligation to tell Coastal why it is that you're not signing the division order?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Okay. Well,
and it was written that way for a reason.
Because it says if you will not sign it because it contains those, then payer should not withhold payment solely because of such refusal. How is the payer to know what the basis of your refusal to sign is without your alerting?
First of all, Your Honor, we've got to remember this burden is not on the payee. Nothing in the statute puts a burden on a payee to say, why aren't you signing a division order? We must remember that there is nothing in a contract. This lease, like virtually every oil and gas lease, does not require the lessor to sign a division order as a condition to getting paid. Common law does not require a payee to sign one. The division order developed as this unilateral document that lessees sent once production was obtained because they needed to update their title information. And they wanted certification, affirmation about title. That's why you don't see this statute written to put the burdens on the lessor. The whole point of the statute was Texas law had been, there had been a lot of abuses with the division order that this court addressed in Govinda, in Middleton. The point of the statute was to address abuses But understandably, Your Honor, payors sometimes want some affirmation of title. So the legislature didn't want it to make it more difficult for payors to get a division order.
Very briefly, Ms. Burney.
Yes, Your Honor.
The written notice, how did you provide notice of the F6 lease?
Your Honor, that written notice is titled Demand for Payment. All we talked about earlier was three. They don't talk about the whole substance of the notice. The notice comes after Coastal has told Coast, this F6 well is producing. When you look at
But the statute requires you to place in writing the notice.
No, Your Honor, we're not under the statute, first of all. We're under the express demand provisions of paragraph 9 of our lease. If you look in the handout, that's what we were under here. There's no doubt about it. This is not a statutory notice requirement, but even if it were, Your Honor, I would have you look at Coe Royal v. Wilbur, which did construe the 91.404 demand requirement. Coe Royal v. Wilbur rejected a lessee's argument that a demand to the lessee, the party with all the information, was somehow insufficient because the court said a lessee has all the information at its fingertips to figure out the demand. That was the case here. You look at the demand requirements in our lease. It said make a written demand for payment. Our demand letter does that. It says demand for payment. It references this lease, and it references the exact paragraph we're talking about. Coastal does not claim that they don't understand what that demand meant. That is not their position here. In fact, if you look at page 47, footnote 7, their brief, they come out and say when they got this demand, they knew the F6 was producing. They knew that they were getting those proceeds. They knew they didn't get to keep them all, and they did not pay. The reason they said they did not pay is because Coates did not sign a division order. But Coates was not required to sign the division order they tendered under the plain language of the statute. Had they tendered a mere certification of interest, we'd been happy to sign it. The truth is, they didn't have any concern about our title. And I'd also like to remind the court that all the other protections in this statute for payors, if they have any concern about title, they do not have to pay. Payors do not have to worry that they are making overpayments. This statute strikes a balance between payees and payors, and we believe that the express language of the statute and the legislative history supports that, and we ask you to consider it.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Please, the court. Let me briefly try to suggest some of the issues that have been raised. I respectfully submit that on one point of our disagreement, perhaps we should ask the court's leave to submit a brief letter brief by both sides. The amicus brief of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, I respectfully submit, clearly submits the law, and I apologize for not having briefed this more fully because I could not have imagined it would have been an issue. If a lessor warrants title that is not in fact sound, settled contract law would allow the lessee to recover its cost of drilling as well as consideration paid for the lease. Warranty of mineral title does not subject you to the consequential damages like wrongful payment of royalty, et cetera, et cetera. The law makes a clear division. I think your point, Justice O'Neill, is precisely correct. There are two separate estates here. One is real property. One is personality. The warranty implications are different. A refusal to warrant one is not an agreement that you are not requiring a warranty on the other. Ms. Burney goes too far when she says they were willing to certify because certification would have been a warranty of title, and they have told us, and what the Corpus Court bought at 766 is failure to warrant title to the mineral estate is an agreement by us when we signed the lease that they won't warrant title to the person.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
If the Coates had warranted their interest in the property, would they have been obligated under the lease if there was a payment of royalty in excess of their warranted interest to have reimbursed you that amount of money?
Your Honor, I think you then would get into issues of the personality. I mean, on the proceeds of the royalty, if we overpaid, does the fact that they weren't entitled to the mineral estate make a difference? I would think probably not, Your Honor.
The argument is that the entitlement to the personality is traced to the title to the mineral interest under oil and gas law established in this state by this court. And so the argument is the warranty of the interest of the minerals, or of the personality, is traced to the warranty of the minerals. The argument then is that if you warrant the title to the minerals, that imposes an obligation that if you're overpaid, that the person who paid the money can come back and get it because it was beyond what was warranted.
Well, I think, Your Honor, in property law, we need to, I mean, property law is both logic and history, but formal things make a difference. In this court's decision in Izaguirre, where you did not apply the venue statute because claims for accrued and past due royalties are personally rather than realty, that distinction was dispositive. Here we get the division law statute, which requires a lessor to sign a lease, to sign a division order, if we comply with the statute, was designed to try to end some of this endless litigation. Here in this division order, doesn't go back to the original title opinion. As you know, under tax planning, these wealthy families are constantly making transfers, transferring a variety of interests. We have 29 payees on this division order. It was designed to put the payor in a position where they could pay with some certitude that they would either have an opportunity to get their money back, or if they're sued by somebody who was underpaid or who had not even signed the division order because the interest was not disclosed, that they could seek indemnification. It's not asking for drilling costs back, et cetera, as you would get on a mineral estate.
But if I refuse to give you the warranty of title, which is the precursor to the warranty of title of mineral interest, which is a precursor to my warranty of my entitlement to what is turned into a personality, if I refuse to do that, then the fact that it's not that the warranty in the division order doesn't cover everything that you'd otherwise be obligated for under a warranty of title, but it does create a warranty in one particular facet that a warranty of the title would do, which is the entitlement to the ownership of what's derived as personality, wouldn't that be inconsistent?
No, I think not, Your Honor. I do think it comes to the heart of it. If you refuse to give me a warranty of title, I ask you for a lease, you refuse to give me a warranty of title, I know I'm going to drill at my risk. I know I'm going to pay you a bonus at my risk. If title fails, I'm not going to get it back because you didn't warrant the title. Then we begin production. Proceeds are now personality. Now I'm asking you to warrant the title to those proceeds. Different title. Title to personality, not the same as title to real property.
But without that warranty, after the argument Ms. Murney is, without that personality warranty, and you paid the royalty to this mineral interest owner, wouldn't she says she'd be obligated to pay you back any overpayment? You're saying that's not true.
Your Honor, let's say we've got A, B, and C. I overpay A, the lessee. I underpay B, and I underpay C.
And
B and C are not going to sue A. They're going to sue me.
No. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not making that. A is the warranty owner. Refuses to give you the warranty.
The lease.
Had it given you that warranty, would you have had the authority under that warranty to reclaim overpayment to A of their royalty? And I'm talking about warranty of the mineral interest. If you overpay them according to that mineral interest, would you have the authority under that warranty to seek reimbursement of that overpayment?
You know, on reflection about Justice Owen's question, I think that the proportionate reduction clause shows that the not an inconsistency with reducing their royalty interest. However, I would be remitted, I suppose, to some type of common law theory if they've not signed a division order. I have paid. I think they could take the position that I had paid at my risk by warranting title to the mineral estate. They're not certifying.
So you,
a warranty,
you do disagree.
They're entitled to the division order that set forth.
You do disagree with Ms. Burney that a mere warranty of their mineral interest would not entitle you to seek reimbursement from them if you overpaid them on the royalties.
You mean if they had warranted their
mineral interest? If they had warranted it, you disagree with her that if you overpaid royalties, that you could not seek reimbursement from her based on that warranty.
I don't think, Your Honor, that their warranty or non-warranty of the mineral estate would go to the overpayment. The proportionate reduction clause, as Justice Sullivan points out, would give me a right to cut down, I mean, to reduce the amount of royalty.
But it would not give you the right to sue them to recoup the overpayment.
I think that I might be able to sue on unjust enrichment or some theory such as that. But we're talking here about a statutory right that was designed to bring order and more stability to the relationships between payors and payees in this context. And I respectfully submit that Coastal fully complied with the statute, that the Court of Appeals analysis was erroneous, and that therefore forfeiture of the lease was an error. They are not entitled to forfeit this lease after our compliance with the
question.
Statute.
Do you agree with Ms. Burney that her client had no obligation in refusing to sign that division order to explain to you his reasons for not signing that order?
Your Honor, I don't think that we were entitled to any detailed explanation. I do think when it says written demand that means that we were entitled to notice. They forfeited that lease because we failed to pay royalties under the F6 well because we were waiting for a return of the division order, advice they weren't going to sign it. So I think that they were obligated to sign it because we had complied with the statute, and that goes to the Court of Appeals. I think they were also obligated to make a written demand that put us on notice. If they say we're demanding royalties payable under the H well, and then I don't think that gives them the right to terminate because we were not paying royalties under the statute, that the Court of Appeals analysis was erroneous, and that therefore forfeiture of the lease was an error. They're not entitled to forfeit this lease after our compliance with the statute.
One more question. Do you agree with Ms. Burney that her client had no obligation in refusing to sign that division order to explain to you his reasons for not signing that order?
Your Honor, I don't think that we were entitled to any detailed explanation. I do think when it says written demand that means that we were entitled to notice. They forfeited that lease because we failed to pay royalties under the F6 well because we were waiting for a return of the division order, advice they weren't going to sign it. So I think that they were obligated to sign it because we had complied with the statute, and that goes to the Court of Appeals. I think they were also obligated to make a written demand that put us on notice. If they say we're demanding royalties payable under the H well, and then I don't think that gives them the right to terminate because we were not paying royalties under F6. And I respectfully submit that the fair way to read that letter with its ray language is to look at the last live pleading.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument. The second cause.
Please rise.